So this is the practical part of the training. So I hope this will be some good skill development, and we're going to practice some in a minute. And then we'll end up with the we'll have some questions and answer time, and then we'll do the Living Hope training. So you guys are doing good. We're on track for finishing up by lunch. Now, anybody, okay, so let me give you guys, since I want you to all be trauma experts and leave and go, oh my goodness, we know so much and have a master's degree in trauma. So after Katrina, no, after 9/11, at 9/11, there was a trauma processing model called CISM, which is Critical Incident Stress Management. It's debriefing. They do that a lot after, police incidents and different people. Well, there was some bad research around CISM, which I don't agree with, and I think CISM, I still use it. It's good stuff. It's pretty much what we do is use some of those debriefing techniques. But anyway, long story short, they came up with the new thing that you will hear. Anybody heard of psychological first aid before? Okay, yep. Got a little bit. But so psych first aid is now what's sort of used after disasters or people go through difficult things. Guys, I just want to tell you, you could go to a class, a psych first aid class, you could do that, and stay all day. And I'm going to teach you how to do psych first aid in 5 minutes, because psych first aid, you already do it. I think especially as believers, you do it. Now, I'm going to go in and give you lots of details about how to do it better and well and all that kind of stuff. But this is just basically what it is. This isn't rocket science. It's that when somebody has been traumatized, so you guys in a church, if somebody has a sudden death, and you go and you respond, or it's been a car accident, or there's something, that basically when you first come, you want to first of all be very aware, observe, just slow yourself down, be very present, make a connection with that person, here's my name, what's your name, if you don't know them. But you really want to create safety. You just want to help them feel comfortable and at ease. Just the kindness, be kind, calm, and compassionate. Guys, this is just what we do as believers, right? We just come in and we love people and we're kind. And then assist with basic needs. This is the part where if you go out and let's say you're going to a home to respond to something, your pastor said, hey, go over and this terrible thing has just happened. Bring water, bottles of water. Water is one of the most practical things that you can do for somebody who's been shocked or traumatized, because it's just about starting to help the body work properly. So bring water. I usually have stuffed animals that I bring for children, something that they can touch and sort of something soft. But just basic needs first. Is there something that we can do to help with that? You want to listen to them. Give realistic reassurances. You don't tell people things that may not be true. You can't always say everything's going to be okay, because it may not be, right? So you just have to be very careful about that. Encourage positive coping. In your packet, one of the things that I gave you is, and I'm going to send to you, is a handout that says self-care after the storms, I believe. And I'll send that one. Maybe what I'll do when I get back, I can probably electronically send that one or give it to the pastors. You can change that to put your church's information on the bottom. It's just a real practical, here's some things that you can do to try to establish normal after a disaster or after a traumatic event. So there's just going to be some resources about that, but everything from encouraging people to rest, to try to get back to a normal routine, to do things that are just healthy, go for a walk, take a break, turn the TV off. Some of those things. You help people connect with others. So this is where we don't want people isolated. Give accurate and timely information. And this is a part where I think one of the people that we're talking about that all the media stuff was inaccurate, right? And so one of the things that creates so much problems in a disaster is all of the rumors and the inaccurate stuff that's going around. It just keeps people hijacked. So don't be careful before you give any information. Make sure you know it's true. All right, now this part, and I talked to talk to you during the break about that. I know that there is one Christian counseling agency in your community, which I hope to get a hold of and just really talk. But the thing is that in your community, you guys really need to have a pretty clear understanding of who are the people that we can refer to. Like, who works with children, right? Who works with, who does EMDR? Everybody's like, what's EMDR? EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It is a very specialized technique that counselors, trauma counselors use to actually be able to go in and process a memory and calm it down. It works. It's really great. Great. Then you bring Christ into that and you just, Jesus comes right on in and helps heal it. Beautiful, great, great, great thing. But you got to know who does that and who do I send people to? Right? So that's one of the things that's often missing in communities after disaster is we don't really know who's out there doing what. And so that's part of trying to get an understanding of that. And then you end the conversation. That's psych first aid. I just put it there because I'm going to give you a lot more information than this, but I just wanted you to see how simple it is to really come alongside people and do this. So I want to talk to you about how do we really do this, and I'm going to give you lots of things. Let me tell you about this packet that you will be receiving just so you'll know ahead of time. When you get it, there are a number of handouts in here. There is a handout on basically how to understand traumatic stress. So it's just things that if you have a neighbor or a friend or somebody who's gone through something, you just hand it. Because one of the things I think that's so difficult is that when these kind of things happen, we don't have a roadmap. We don't know, what do we do? Like, what's the first thing that we do? So this will give really practical things. When does a family member or friend need professional help? Gives you really some input on what does that look like. This is a great one. And again, you guys can put your own information at the bottom. This one's called When It Seems Like There's No Hope. What are the warnings for suicide? What are some feelings and thoughts this person may be experiencing? And then what do we do if somebody you know is suicidal? And what are the different things? There's tips down here. There's also the 24-hour crisis number on here, 1-800 number. We put our numbers, but y'all, you know, can use it and put it for your community. Then there's a form. There's a handout in here about how do you survive a sudden death, all right? So that's a great handout to give to somebody who's had a traumatic death. This one is dealing with tragedy, and it's about grief. It's just a one-pager on grief. There's a number of things in here about children, like a crisis fact sheet about helping children cope with trauma. And then there's another one on children as well. Lots of things that gives a lot of understanding about what's normal to see for children. There's a tips for relaxation. So this is a good one to give to people for children and for adults. And then there's something in here that I consider gold. After Katrina, we were connected in with Northwest Medical Teams, which actually paid for my salary for the first couple of years in New Orleans. And there's a lady that works for them that is a grief specialist. And so she wrote this 3-page suggestion for helping people who are grieving, which it has such amazing wisdom in it. So I'd love to share those things with you. So when you get it, my encouragement is if you're somebody that gets sent out, you know, like in your church, hey, pastor says, please go over and talk with someone. Have like a file or a folder where you just put it. Mine, I carry it. It's right here. I just grab it and I carry it with me. I have this little file thing and wherever I go, and that way if somebody needs something, I just pull it out and go, hey, here you go. Because we want to have resources, because I can't even begin to tell you how good it feels for somebody who's struggling with something to just go, oh, wow, all right. I didn't think about that. Maybe I'll try this. It just begins to calm the brain down. So it's a really great thing to have resources. So you'll definitely be getting that. I talked about this earlier, that one of the most important gifts that you can give to somebody is just to tell them that they're not crazy. If I had a dollar for every time somebody told me they were crazy, I would be rich. That's a thought. No, I can't ask people to pay me a dollar when they say that. But anyway, I mean, these are just basically, this is what people feel. They feel very isolated and alone. So the best thing that we can say is that no, you're just having a normal response to an abnormal situation. You're normal. You're not crazy. Okay. These are the kinds of things that we start to use to validate their feelings and to calm them down. Oh, we're about to watch the video. Okay. So if you want to pull it up, but let me talk about it first. First of all, let me tell you about this really great research project that they did. And I don't know if you're like me or not. You're probably not, because my brain's sort of weird. But I really sometimes go, oh my gosh, how do they think about these things to research? So somebody was sitting around one day and decided to sort of ask this question of, I wonder if animals who are attacked by, like if little animals who are attacked by big animals, do they develop PTSD? It's a great question. I wouldn't have ever thought about it. So somebody went out and studied it. And so they, sure enough, they studied little bears. So here's a little bear, and the little bear was like out playing, and then the big animal came along. Little bear has the same kinds of responses that we do. Blood pressure went up, started to shake, anxious, digestive system shut down completely, right? Wouldn't eat. I mean, just was shaking. And obviously these little bears didn't get eaten. So that's a good thing. So, but basically then they saw something very interesting. So all the little bear had the same kinds of responses that people do, right? They have a trauma response. And then when the big animal went away, the little bear would go over to mom or dad. Didn't matter. His mom or dad was fine, and would rub up against mom or dad and would just sort of snuggle for a few minutes, and then they would go off to play and their bodies returned back to normal. Okay? So what is most important in calming us down is attachment. We were created for connection. We were created for touch and for closeness. And so being in relationships with people, giving hugs, being present, giving empathy, these are the things that help heal people when they're anxious and attacked. So I want you guys to watch Brené Brown's video for a second, and then we'll process it. Some of you may have seen this before, but if not, we will process it after we watch it.
So what is empathy, and why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions, where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment, not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, climb down. I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time. Because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So, I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
Okay. Anybody want to share thoughts or feelings after watching that video? Just anything that came up for you about that. Do you think we do empathy well? No. Yeah, it's a little bit easier with shared experience. You're right. That's true. It is a little bit easier for us to sort of connect in. It definitely is harder when you haven't, you know, experienced that. So that's true.
We want to fix.
Yes.
Just like we want to fix it.
Yes.
When trauma comes to our own lives, we want out.
Yes.
We want to fix.
Yes. You're so smart. Yep. That's true. If I had time, you guys jot down if you have a pen. The video, you've probably seen it before. It's called It's Not About the Nail. Yeah, that's hysterical. So it's a really funny video. I should, just for purposes of helping y'all laugh a little. But the point is that you're right on, is that we get so disoriented, dysregulated ourselves when somebody is suffering, that we go into that place that we want to just take the pain, we want to fix it. And unfortunately, and some of you who are married, you know that doesn't work, right? It's like my spouse, I just want you to hear me, and the other one's like, well, no, let me tell you what to do, because we're uncomfortable because we don't like to be around pain, right? So it's really, really hard to do empathy. It's very, very difficult to do empathy. You know, and it really breaks my heart, because I think in the church, we sort of use God sometimes as a way of avoiding emotions and avoiding pain. And so, you know, if somebody tries to tell you something really painful and you say, well, you know, God promises all things are going to work for good. Well, that's 100% true. But sometimes we use those things too soon, because we just are like, you know, oh, I'll pray about it, or have you prayed about it? Unfortunately, many of our very hurt people, suffering people, feel so much shame when they go to church. Because, man, I hear this great sermon, and I try to do it, and I'm still hurt, and I'm still broken, and so there must be something wrong with me. There's a lot of pain. So we have to be better at just coming into those places. So, you know, you guys all know the story of Job, right? And Job's friends get such a bad rap because, you know, when they opened their mouths, they said really stupid things. But what people don't really understand is that Job's friends sat in the ashes with Job, who was sores and he lost everything. It was devastation. And they did not say one word for 7 days. I don't think anyone in this room has ever sat in with someone for 7 days in devastation and just been present. My first internship, many, many years ago, I've been a counselor for, I think, 25 years now. So when I was back in school and I was a baby, you know, just out of in seminary, I actually had to go and work at Children's Hospital in New Orleans. And my job was, when a child died, I had to come take care of the family. It was the worst job ever, but I learned so much stuff. And there was one night in particular where a single mom lost her only child, and he was older. There wasn't any chances of her having another child. She was completely by herself. Her family was about 12 hours away. And so I simply sat there with her during the night, and there were no words. There were no words. And I had to really, like, depend on the Lord and just go, you know, internally, I'm freaking out. Like, you know, I'm sitting in the room with this dead child and this mom who is, you know, devastated. And it was like this amazing place for me, because I really, there wasn't anything about me that could help in that situation. And, you know, at the end of it, I remember her saying, and I felt so inadequate. And I just remember her saying, she goes, Michelle, I couldn't have made it without you sitting in the room with me. And I was like, okay, note to self, there's something really, you know, okay about just being present, right? And we're going to talk about being present. But empathy, guys, is something that we're not very good at. And it's something that we really need to grow in. We need to allow the Lord to help us to become better. And it requires us really calming ourselves down, and sitting in hard places when we don't have the answers. You know, it's just hard. So I just want to, you know, the thing is, I don't want to shame anybody and go, oh, yeah, sometimes I do say, well, at least you don't have this, or, yeah, I'll pray for you. I hope it gets better. Right? We don't really go there. Sometimes for good reason, sometimes because we have too much stuff going on ourselves and we just don't have, you know, the ability to do that. But there's really good reasons, because it's not easy. It's not easy for anybody. Anybody have somebody be empathetic with you? Yeah. Can you talk about what that experience is like for somebody to give you empathy? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Good. 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 He might take a deep breath and yeah. Good, good. So I think, and again, you're grabbing a lot of these really great things, that when we can sit with people in hard places and we can validate their feelings and we can listen and we can be kind and we're not trying to tell them what to do and do those things, that there's something really wonderful. It's almost like calms our hearts down. And it really is the place where healing happens. So I'm glad that you have that. I think it's such a gift that when we're able to give empathy and when people give us empathy. So what I want to talk to you guys about is the ministry of presence. And, you know, being up on the West Coast, you guys, like, you don't live in the Bible Belt, right? I don't live in the Bible Belt. I'm in New Orleans, but I grew up in the Bible Belt. And it's very, very different. You know, living in Portland for 8 years, this is a very different part of the United States. So even if you wanted to, you really can't go quote scripture anyway, because people will, you know, curse you out or walk away or just get pretty agitated. I think Jacqueline told me, and I don't know who told you, I don't know if it was Char or Paul or somebody who told you that basically that some of the way that people were responding to, you know, when people were saying, oh, we're praying for y'all from other parts of the country, that the Californians were saying, we don't want your prayers, we want your help, right? It's like, well, that's a California thing. That's a West Coast thing to say. So you really have to be good at this, and you probably already are because you live here. But I want to talk a little bit about that. Celebration, I told you a little bit about Celebration. Let me finish the story. So Celebration, when Celebration Church, when the storm happened, they had one campus. Today, 12 years later, they have 9 or 10, I think they're about to start another one, all through the community, and literally have baptized thousands of people. And this is, again, a church that made the decision that we are going to go out and serve our community. We're going to go out and love our community. We're going to be present. They certainly would pray for people when appropriate, but they went out and met needs first, right? If y'all see the Tide commercial where they go to disasters, that's sitting out in front of Celebration Church. That's one of the videos. So it's like, you know, they just did practical. How can we practically help people? And then the opportunities to share Christ come from that. So I just want to encourage you guys, like, this ministry of presence kind of thing is huge. You can reach your community for Christ in a post-disaster community, because you can go out and really be Jesus in community and have wonderful things happen. I think it's really important. We've already talked about that it's important for us to really understand trauma and to help people. Let's talk a little bit more about what ministry of presence looks like. I'll just read these. Becoming the channel through which God's presence is manifested in interpersonal relationships. That's what it means. That's the definition. to be fully present with another person, exhibiting a non-anxious, comfortable presence while demonstrate God with us through interconnectedness of the human interaction. Okay, there's a lot in that. But let me just say this, is what we're looking for, non-anxious. Oh, that's the hard part, right? Because when somebody's telling you something painful, it's, you know, we get overwhelmed. Like, what do I say? What do I do? Guess what? I'm taking the stress off of you. You don't really have to say anything. It's very simple. You can say things like, thank you for sharing this with me. This is so hard. My heart hurts for you right now. You know, just compassion, empathy. You can just basically, you don't have to fix it because guess what? You can't. God's our healer. He's the redeemer. He's the one who heals and mends broken hearts. He uses us. He uses us to love and to connect and help. So bringing God into it, like I have clients who don't know Jesus. And it's really fun. I was telling Jacqueline and Char last night, I have this guy who's been anti-Christ. And I love the fact that I get to walk this trauma journey with him. I've been working with him for a couple of years and we're in a good place. He's moving into healing. And he wrote me an email last week and said, hey, I've just been sort of thinking about God. Are you okay with me asking you some questions next session? I'm like, yes. 2 years just sitting and being and all right, yay. So we'll see what God's going to do. But I think this is the thing is that we bring God with us, all right? God's the one who opens the doors and gives us opportunity. It's just about creating safety. All right, being present. Let's be very practical. You want to help people feel comfortable, be kind, calm, and compassionate. Big one, don't argue. Minimize their problems. Don't go, well, yeah, it could be this, right? Just don't argue. This is not theological, you know, times to talk about theology. You want to affirm the uniqueness of each individual situation and reaction, not a time to talk about your own trauma, okay? So when I go in and I'm talking with somebody, I might be triggered, right? I lost my dad a little over a year ago, and I have a couple of clients right now that just lost their dads. But that's not my time to work on my healing. It's my time. I do that after my session or after that time that I'm ministering. So you really want to be there for that person. You want to encourage them to connect into life groups or small groups or churches or communities. You just want to help people connect in. Really be strengths-based. I think oftentimes we don't. You know, we're as a society, we focus on problems and we don't always focus on strengths. And this is a good thing. If this person does have good friendships, hey man, that's a strength. Let's really talk about that and use that. Be very objective. Meet the person where he or she is and create safety for the person to feel whatever they need to feel. So let's talk about feelings. Feelings are not bad or good. They are feelings, and it is our job just to basically let people share those feelings in a safe space. I don't have to agree with people's feelings. What I do need to do is to validate their feelings, right? I'm going to let you guys practice this in a few minutes. So if somebody's really angry, if I try to talk them out of their anger, what do you think is going to happen? You're going to get angry. If I basically go, I get that, man, that would make me angry, or I can see why you're so angry. That makes sense. What are they going to do? They come down, right? So it's about meeting them where they are and sort of mirroring that emotion and saying, yeah, I get that. I get it. And what happens is that begins to regulate somebody's system so that their bodies start to calm down. Okay, so we want to validate it. Meet them where they are. I think that's one of the things sometimes we freak out if somebody's angry with God. I mean, all you got to go do is like look at the life of David. Oh my goodness, David was the most emotional person in Scripture. And what did God say about him? You're a man after my own heart, man after God's own heart. So God's okay with us being emotional. He created us that way. That's how he created us. So we don't have to like talk them out of it. In fact, the best thing that helps people is just to say, hey, listen, I get why you would feel that way. If I have a woman who's basically saying, Michelle, every day of my childhood, I pray that God would rescue me out of, you know, from my uncle abusing me. And I really struggle to think that he loves me. And sometimes I feel distant. I'm going to go, yeah, I get that. I mean, that's hard. Every day you're saying, please, God, rescue me. And it didn't happen until you were older. I get that. So if I would say, well, but you know, God really, he was there, and which we can get to later. But if I start off that way, I lose her, right? So feelings, we've got to meet them where they are, create safety. So active listening techniques. All right. We were talking about this one. So I think I'm going to put my coat on. My insides are shivering. So I'm like, oh, I'm really not nervous. I'm really okay. I teach all the time, but my insides are starting to get cold. So active listening is really just about simply putting on your brain, whereas you're not thinking about the football game that's about to happen or what you're eating for dinner, but that you're listening in a way that the other person knows that you hear them. All right. So it could be something like Jacqueline says, we're going to go look at trees maybe today. And I say, oh, well, I don't know. Well, I'm hungry. Well, that's not really active listening. Oh, really? We're going to go look at some trees today, maybe. Okay. Well, what, and that's active listening, is that you want to basically sort of even repeat back or let the person know that, hey, I'm here and I hear what you say. We want to provide safety where people can really share their stories, thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And then we want to be genuine and just all the things that we've been talking about. All right. Here's what not to do. Don't argue or be inattentive. Do not demand or probe for emotional response. Okay, this is a whole nother issue. Everything like leads to 10 more. Okay, so have you guys seen anybody who's had something really bad happen and they don't look like they're distressed? Okay. What that's called is emotional dissociation, right? It's like a switch is turned off and it's like a newspaper account, but there's no emotions. Again, that is a post-traumatic stress response. That's also a PTSD characteristics, is that basically it's avoidance. I'm just not going to feel it, right? So if that's the case, we are not going to demand it. We're just going to try to really create some safety so that if that person's able to go there, they will. Do not provoke guilt, blaming the person. We talked about that. Keep it very safe. And don't respond with anger or disappointment. So if somebody's really angry, you have to know yourself, because some people get angry when people are angry, right? You get angry back. We got to learn how to self-soothe you so that you can respond in a way and not be angry back. Do not problem solve too early. I really do need to put that video in. That would be a good one to show. But first, allow the survivor to give voice to the situation and receive confirmation empathy. Don't interrupt the survivor too early with guiding questions. Do not challenge, interpret, or make statements about larger issues beyond the crisis. Keep it right in the present. Okay, one couple more things, and I'm going to let you guys practice. All right. Sometimes people will tell you stories, and you and your brain will be saying that can't be true. It is not our job to prove whether or not stories are true or not true. It is our job to be present and hear and love and care. So for example, let me give you some examples of this. If I told you about my childhood, there was a tree outside my childhood home, and I could sit here and I could tell you, oh my gosh, this tree was so big. And I'd look outside, and sometimes the branches were scary at nighttime because of the shadows, and it was just huge. And then I would take you to my house, because this actually happened. I went to my childhood home not too long ago. And I was like, how is that tree so little? Did it shrink? No, it didn't shrink. I was a kid. So children will have perspectives of things that happen to them that are not always accurate. When people are traumatized, sometimes they dissociate and they have pieces missing. And so sometimes the story is like, wait a second, that doesn't make sense. It is not your job to figure that out. It is your job to care about that person, to love that person, to create safety so that that person can talk about the story, but do not try to. In fact, we need to believe people. The worst cases of PTSD that I see are people who were children who tried to tell that they were abused, and no one believed them. Especially when mamas don't believe, that's the worst PTSD right there. So very, very important, if a child comes up and tells you, I believe you. Again, details, getting all the details does not matter. So we want to do that. I also wanted to let you know, is that every time that a survivor can safely share their story with someone, that helps them begin to heal it. So just, you know, again, people are going to be telling their stories over and over and over again. On the night the fires happened, this is what happened. You come alongside, be present, listen, actively listen, validate their feelings. You can be curious. Well, tell me more about that. Give empathy, and that helps them heal. That's it. That's you bringing Jesus into it. That's you coming into the presence, you know, of this very painful place. The other thing is, do not go and tell other people's stories, right? We want to protect people's stories. You fire stuff when you're talking about, oh my goodness, I know somebody who, that's okay. But when you start talking about deeper stuff with abuse and marriage issues and all that, we just need to sometimes in the name of, hey, can you pray for, we really dishonor people's pain. We need to be much more protective of people's stories. All right, so I want everyone in the room to have an experience today that I hope's good. If it's not, we'll process it. But I'm going to like you to, because I'm going to make it safe as possible, and Jacqueline will be here helping me. But what I like for you guys to do is break up into pairs, just two. Let's just do have a partner, and we'll make sure that everybody's got a partner. And all I want you to do is to do this. I know already that none of you had an experience where anybody, I don't think in this room, actually lost your home. But all of you are disaster survivors because you live in this community and you've this was such an awful, hard, tragic situation for you. And so what I want you to do is we're going to do about 5 minutes each that I'm going to let each of you, and I'll call time when it's time to switch. And I really just want you to talk about where you are today. Like, hey, this is where I am. And when I think about this, this is the hardest part, or the part I'm really worried about or fearful about or struggling with. And just talk a little bit about your experience. And your partner's job is to listen actively and to validate the feelings and to give empathy. Okay? And then what we're going to do is we're going to do that, and we're going to come back, and we're going to process. We're going to talk about it. You know, like, how did it go? Okay? So I'm going to give you about 1 minute to find a partner. If you want to move around in the room, let's make sure if you don't have a partner, let us know. And so let's get a partner. Everybody get one. Make sure you have one. If you don't have one, raise your hand. And okay. Who needs a partner? Do you need a partner? You need a partner? Y'all are good. Do you need a partner? All right. So you, two guys right there. Y'all got a partner? Okay, who else is missing one? You're missing one? Okay. Jacqueline, you want to be partners right here? All right. Unless, is there anybody? Okay, anybody else need one? Yeah, you can give another one. You can just, whatever you're, you know, feeling. It doesn't matter, just to give her the experience. Yeah, right here. I thought I had one. Oh, yeah, you've got one. All right, you need one still? Okay, you guys, y'all want to go be partners? Okay, that's good. All right, anybody else need a partner? Okay, so I'm watching the clock, and I'm going to call it at 5 minutes. Okay, so on your mark, get set, go. And you decide who goes first. One person, the other person listens. All right, so let's chat for a second. You guys, I could tell, I couldn't hear anything anybody was saying, but I could just tell by body language that you guys were really, really there for each other. I mean, it just looked beautiful. So anybody want to just share what positively what that was like to have, like, what was your partner doing? Did you feel listened to, validated, cared about, empathy? Anybody want to talk about how well their partner did? Da, 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 da. Wait, what? Yeah. Well, I mean, just in the sense of, what did you notice your partner doing that felt well, felt good for you? Yes, ma'am. Good. She nodded her head. So just really simple ways of, hey, I'm right here with you. I hear you. I see you. You know, one of the words for God that I love is the God who sees. Right? And so when we're there and we can see someone, man, it's just like, it just really does minister to our hearts. So yeah, just as simple, like, I'm here and I'm nodding and I'm right here. Okay. So what else? What did your partner do well? Yes. Good. Good. So really not interrupting, right? So listening and letting you finish, letting you have some time to put your thoughts together. Good, good, good. All right. So, yes, sir.
Sympathy in the validating of what you're right. What I also got is the sense of connection.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. So, really the first one you said, like, I got the connection. What was the first one?
The validation.
Validation. Oh, of course. Yeah, so yeah, I get it. That makes sense that you feel that way. I wanted you guys to experience that because your body really does calm down. Like, when you hear that, it's like, oh. And so then you said, I felt really connected, right? Y'all want me to tell y'all something? Okay, I'll tell you something. You don't really have a choice because I get to say whatever I want to say. So that's really cool. Sorry, I'll let y'all into my brain for a second. Okay, so there's this really another great research project with couples where it's sort of crazy. But anyway, I don't know who decided that the wives were the ones that got shocked, but they put a wife and a husband, and this would work with any kind of relationship, but they put the wife and the husband, and they were distressed, so they were really struggling. And they put them in this machine where they could watch the woman's brain whenever they shocked her. And they let her be alone, hold the hand of a stranger, and then hold the hand of her distressed partner, husband. And what it showed was that the place where the person recorded the most pain was when she was holding the hand of her distressed husband, not alone, not with the stranger. They did do this. I'm an emotionally focused therapist. And so we did 6 months of EFT with the couple and came back and did the same thing. And then the wives, when they were now connected in with their partner, they kept saying things like, well, why did you turn the shocker off? Like, I don't feel anything. Because when you feel connected and safe, pain actually goes down. It's really crazy. There's lots of research around this. So when you feel safe, you really do feel less painful. So being connected is huge. So that was a great insight. All right, anybody else? Something was good. Yes.
I appreciate that she didn't try to trump my story.
Yep, perfect. So there wasn't any of that. Let me tell you about what's happening to me, right? Uh-huh. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Which was good. Yeah, but that's okay. But that's the whole thing about, one of the hardest things is us being comfortable when people are silent, right? So just being comfortable and letting you have some space and seeing if there was anything you wanted to share. And if you didn't, she didn't pressure you. That's great. That's great. So what was hard when you were listening? Reliving it. Oh my gosh. Okay. So when the person actually was sharing, you started remembering things and feeling things. Yep. That's a hard one. That's a hard one. So were you able to know that was going on and still sort of be present with the other person? Yeah. Good. Yeah. But that is when somebody starts to tell you something and it triggers your stuff. It is, that makes it harder to be present and active. Okay? Any other challenges? Yes.
I find it one of the ways that I was taught communication was like the way of active listening or
Which is okay. So I didn't spend a whole lot of time with curiosity because I wanted you guys to have more of the experience of, hey guys, welcome. Have more of the experience of basically really being present and being okay with silence. Curiosity is a great form, a part of active listening. So to be able to say, tell me more about that, or I was wondering about that, or help me to understand that, is a great part. So you would just want to balance that with, you know, with the other parts that we talked about. Anybody having a hard time being present because you were thinking about what you wanted to say next? Okay.
I think trying to turn off that, how can I help solve their problem?
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm trying to listen to what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, just listen.
Yeah.
I'm not here to solve the problem.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. What were you going to say?
Mm-hmm. But more with
moving in
body language and,
right.
And eyes. You know, we moved from beyond the facts to the emotion of it.
Yeah.
So that was a
good transition. Right. And that's the thing is that when you do attune or connect, it drops you into deeper emotional places. So that's a perfect sort of demonstration of what happened, right? So are you glad that you just did that? I just saw you guys, there was some great connection. And again, if your experience wasn't okay, then that's also okay. I think I'd want you just to be curious around what made it hard, right? Maybe even ask Jacqueline and I before you leave to say if somebody in here said, listen, that was really, really hard, struggled, and I didn't feel comfortable talking about it in the big group, then just check in with us, okay? Because, this is not easy. Our culture is so hungry for this. It is amazing. We're just hungry for just having 5 minutes. That's all you guys did was 5 minutes of sharing and 5 minutes of listening. Okay. Good job. Good job. Really good job. All right. Let's go ahead and let's move forward. I want to get you guys out of here for lunch. So I'm going to talk about a few things and then we're going to move into our Living Hope training time. But let me just finish up a few things with you. Okay, so we've talked a lot about PTS, which is the post-traumatic stress. You will have people in your community who have PTSD, right? And so 3 months out, you will have PTSD. And so this is the part where I just wanted you guys to know as a church body, what do you do with people in your congregation who have PTSD? I think, first of all, you need to get educated. That's what you're doing today. Like, what is it? You know, what is it? Let's understand it so that we don't shame people for it. Know what your limitations are. You can absolutely love people and be present and help listen to them, but you do not know how to heal PTSD. That's not, unless you're, you know, a trauma specialist who's been trained. This is something where you've got to know your limitations and be able to give good referrals for people who can help them with the PTSD part. I think the biggest thing is, and this is the part that, you know, when Katrina happened in New Orleans, we had a lot of churches, especially in our African American community, that were absolutely anti-counseling. You know, it was like from the devil. Well, Katrina happened. And then they were like, okay, wait, we actually don't know how to do this. And, you know, the things that we've done in the past aren't working. And so there is such a respect. We work with all the churches in New Orleans, and we have about 150 community partners, secular, Children's Hospital and all the legal people and all of that. But the churches, that has been the greatest privilege for me, is to be able to go in and really help people in churches and communities where before this wasn't valued. right? So understand that we need to give some spiritual support. So if you have somebody who's working on some really deep trauma healing, they may not be able to teach Sunday school for a few months. They may just not. They may emotionally not be able to do that. So let's just not shame people and you know, let's encourage them to get the help. Just like you encourage them to go to the doctor if they have diabetes. PTSD is a brain disorder, so, you know, just get help. You want to honor people's pain, show sensitivity to their hurts, learn their language and issues, provide permission and safety to look at spiritual beliefs. Understand traumatic grief. Really great book. It's a workbook called Mending the Soul. Has a lot of really great help for helping people who are trauma survivors. And then this is a big one. It's just be patient for healing to occur. It takes a long time for people who have extensive trauma because it's almost like you have to really reprogram a lot of those things, which we'll talk about a little bit in a second. Okay, so when you are referring somebody to a counselor, this is sort of a roadmap of what good trauma counseling looks like. The counselor should be helping that person learn how to develop coping strategies and safety so that they can process their story. They should have very specific ways of being able to work through their story. It usually takes me 4 months to do assessments and to do coping before I even know what a person's story is. We start working on that. Change maladaptive coping strategies so that people learn a lot of unhealthy ways of coping with your trauma. You learn a lot of unhealthy ways, so you have to learn healthier ways, right? So an example of that would be basically I grew up in a family where secrets were allowed, and so what I've learned to do is not to talk to anyone and push everything inside and ignore my pain. Once I'm healing, I've got to learn how to begin to appropriately let people in and share things so that I don't continue to push things back. So that's just one example, but there's hundreds of examples of things that we do to survive when we have trauma that don't work later on. And then also, of course, should have forgiveness component as well. Okay, let's talk about self-care. Again, we're moving quickly. Everybody's been on an airplane. Important for you to know that you have to put your oxygen mask on before you put your children's. The same thing as when you're doing ministry. You have to make sure that you're healthy. And you've got to take good care of you. I think there's always been a little bit of challenges because as believers, we get things, you know, we're just not balanced. And so we are to lay our lives down. But the Lord also says that we are to love ourselves as we love others. So the thought is that if I'm going to go love others, I've got to love me first. So there's a balance piece of this that you really have to take good care of yourself because I have PTSD because of the stories that I hear, right? I have PTSD from other things that happened to me. When you are sitting in with trauma, you have to make sure that you take care of you. And so that's an important part. It's not selfish to take care of you. Right, it's selfness. It's making sure that you're healthy so that you can minister and help. We talked about post-traumatic growth. So we've already looked at that. That is real and true and wonderful. So 2 Corinthians 1:5 says, just as the sufferings of Christ flow over in our lives, so also through Christ our comfort overflows. It is one of the most amazing gifts to be able to have the privilege of sitting with someone who is suffering and allowing Christ's love to flow through you into that person. It is absolutely a privilege and something that we should definitely value. So John Eldridge wrote this. He said, somehow Jesus' sufferings overflow into our lives. Somehow ours are linked to his. This is a great honor. It grants our sorrows an incredible dignity. It invites us to know an intimacy and connection with Jesus in them because of them. The sufferings of Jesus are the noblest part of his life story, the cross, the crown of thorns. What an unspeakable honor that he would share even this with us. And what that means is the point that I'm sharing is that when you are given the privilege of sitting with someone who is suffering, it is a gift because you are then sharing in Christ's suffering. Right? And it's something that we don't really think about very often, but I just want to encourage you just by the fact that you came on a Saturday morning and you came to a trauma workshop and you're here because you love your community and you want to be able to be better at this. Guys, this is so amazing. The privilege of doing this and having Christ's heart in you to do this is really amazing. Hard, but it is amazing. A few years ago, I was talking about that we went to Sandy and worked after the hurricane. And I had never been to the 9/11 Memorial. And the first time, how many of you have been to the 9/11 Memorial? Okay, some of you have. So those of you who've been, you probably know about the survivor tree. So there's one tree at the park that was survived 9/11 and then was taken and placed into the park. And then they planted the one survivor tree and all the rest of the trees are another type of tree. It's all the same. So there's two types of trees. There's a survivor tree and then the others. And so the first time I went, I was really in awe of it. It's like, wow, this is amazing. You know, wow, the survivor tree. I was really fascinated. The fourth time I went, I actually went to the park and this was a picture that I took. And as you see, the survivor tree is the only one that's blooming. Now, if I could get you up closer to it, what's very fascinating about the survivor tree is that what they did is when they put it in the park is they took the tree, they have a special fence around it. It's really like grounded. It's put in, it's protected. Like it's the only tree like that. The rest of them are just sort of planted. Hey, good luck, guys. This one is super, super special. It's like it survived. It survived 9/11. We're honoring it. And when I was standing there, the Lord spoke to me and he said, Michelle, this is what I've called you to do. I said, okay, help me. Like what? What do you mean? He said, when you are able and I'm gifted you these people that have been hurt and who suffer, you are the fence. You're the ones who holds and protects them and loves on them. And I am the one who heals them and redeems their stories. And if you can tell, and it's hard to tell, that this is the most beautiful tree in the whole park. It's gorgeous. It's bigger. It's protected. It's loved. It has survived. All right. Your community is filled with people who have been broken and who've survived the unthinkable. They have been devastated. They have been hurt, shocked. They're blown away. Their bodies and brains and hearts aren't working right. It is our privilege as the body to come alongside each one of those, build a fence around them, protect them, pray for them, love them, listen to them, care for them, and allow God to just heal. Use Christ in us. Heals brokenness. Okay? We've talked about this, that we have this amazing opportunity to be a part of God's redemption. This is a mission field for the church because, listen, suffering's only increasing. We are going to do the Living Hope group in just a second. But I want to pause before we transition and I'll tell you what we're about to do. But I want Jacqueline to come on up and grab a mic. Cause I want us just to pause. All right. You have just done a massive intense training before we then go and look at the Living Hope materials. And I want to just give you a second just to process and then go, all right, Michelle, this is all fine, but you forgot about this, or I want to ask you about that, or hey, Jacqueline, what about this? So we tried to cover a bunch of stuff. So do you have questions at this point, things that we could help you with before we go on into the Living Hope stuff? No questions? Yes, okay. What's that? Right.
And there are some that we can, like you have your binder there that you have copies.
Yeah.
Are those things that we are also allowed to make copies?
Yes.
Without copyright?
Yeah. There's a couple of them that might, if they have a copyright thing on it, I guess not, but I don't think any of those do. If that, most of those are able to use by, you know, we have permission to use them. So most of those are actually mine, some of them, and they have like Celebration Hope stuff, and you can just take that off our information. But I will be mailing that to you guys. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. So psych first aid is for initial response, right? That's like the disaster response. All this stuff that we've been talking to you about today, for the most part, this is initial, let's just go in response. If they're in a church, you want to talk about follow-up? I mean, I can talk about follow-up, but do you want to talk a little bit about follow-up? Do you guys follow up? I mean, you're not always able to, but some you do. You would go ahead. You go for it.
So yeah, like she said, psychological first aid, that's usually people who come, like a lot of people will actually come in just to do that and then will actually leave. So it's not a recurring thing. Then there's the longer term, which is kind of what you guys are doing, which is being there for the person in the everyday and then recognizing when they need further help and referring, like she said. Things like the Living Hope groups, which she's going to teach about, which is a ongoing week after week support group.
Okay. All right. Somebody else had a question. Did you?
I think it's along the same lines for down the road, but in grief, there's a lot of regret. And yeah. If only, and so many people here, if only I'd grabbed
right.
such and such, and, you know, in the few minutes that they had to leave. And, in the initial response,
right.
we're not there
to fix it. Right.
To help right. them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, I think I'm.
How do you deal with their regrets and their, if they're
yeah.
tormented?
Yeah. So I think that one of the things, guys, that you can do to help, I'm going to come back and answer, and I'm going to piggyback it a little bit. One of the things that you can do is that when somebody has told you their story and you've really processed and you've listened, you could ask this wonderful question of what possible good could God bring from this, or what possible good could come from this situation, as a way of helping people begin to make the connections, right? So a lot of times, like if I've gone in and done an initial response and somebody had tragic death or something's happened, and then they go through and we've really processed or listened and talked. And then you just ask that simple question of, you know, I just wonder what possible good can maybe come from this. It then goes into this place of, oh, well, you know, I'm more valuing of the people in my life now, you know, or things don't really matter as much. And so it's almost like a cognitive connection where people can start to make sense of it a little bit. So asking a kind of question like that is actually, I think, something that's very helpful in response. That's an actual part of the SISM piece. When you're talking about this long term and people are really grieving things, I think you attune and you listen and you go with it. And you can also then encourage them to, you know, towards coping resources. Like, and basically validating, but also saying, you know, have you thought about this? Right? Or have you thought about this? I think the thing is what we're looking for is if somebody gets stuck, that's where we want to refer out to a professional. If they just can't get past it. Anybody seen Tear Soup before? Have you seen Tear Soup? Another little resource, Tear Soup. I think Norman Wright still sells it. I don't know if you can get it on Amazon. It's a video. It's a grief video. It's a great, 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 great video. It basically uses making soup as an image of grief, right? And it's awesome. You put all your comfort food in and it takes time and process, and then you put it in the freezer and then you have to take it back out. But it talks about the fact that sometimes people don't pay attention to their soup and it burns, right? So it's when people get stuck. So it's almost like if you have somebody that's stuck, why didn't I, and they can't, that's usually a place you're going to have to get some professional help. Okay. Is that, did I answer it? I said a bunch of stuff, so I don't know if I answered it. Okay. All right. Anybody, one more question? Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Right. Right. Yep. 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 You want to talk about that one? Okay. So the touch piece is that the thing is, touch is awesome, but always ask for permission. To just say basically is, hey, boy, right now, I would really, you know, if it's okay with you, I'd love to give you a hug. Would you like a hug? That's what I'd use. Say, you know, would you like a hug right now? Or are you okay with me touching your hand right here? You know, just because whenever you touch, blood pressure comes down. That's just the way our bodies respond. But if you've got a trauma survivor who's been hurt, you just have to ask for permission. Just for permission. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you shake their hand, you can put your hand on the other side as well. So with one hand you shake and the other you touch their hand.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. I like that. So did y'all hear that? When you shake somebody's hand, you actually can shake them and then hold. Yeah. You hold them and then put and touch them at the same time. So again, that's a safe way. Yeah. 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 Hey, this is just a side note, but if you guys are married, if you hug more than 30 seconds, the hormones in your body release just like same hormones for nursing. That's the bonding hormone. Hugs are awesome. So go and hug 30 seconds or more today. You can put the clock out too. I did this with my husband one time and he was like, are you kidding? I was like, yeah, I want to see what happens for 30 seconds. But yeah, wouldn't you guys love to be married to me? I was an English teacher and now a counselor. Poor guy. Y'all need to pray for him. All right. Okay, let's switch gears. Okay, so now you're going into an official training. This is a different, Jacqueline, can you pull up that PowerPoint for me? This is a different one. Again, I'm going to email these to you. This is the official training for the Living Hope groups. Now, you cannot order these books unless you've been trained. So this is the importance of if you would like to do a group in your church or in your community, this gives you the right, because you're going to get a certificate at the end, and this will give you the right to order the phone numbers on there, and you can call Joellen and order some books to be able to do a group. I love these groups. So I think that each of the churches represented, if y'all could start a group, you have a leader and a co-leader. And this is just a very practical way to really let people come together and have a safe place to work through some of these issues. So some of the topics, and then I'm going to do the training, are stress and trauma, safety, routine, and control, rest, relaxation, and joy, managing stressors, renewing your mind, mindful of grace, grieving and grace, managing depression, healing guilt and shame, trusting family and friends, safe and healthy relationships, handling problems, staying resilient. Great, great stuff. So it brings together a lot of the coping strategies that we've talked about today. And it starts off with a little Bible study in the beginning. It's the only one that I know that we have both that come together. Okay. So I like it. It's been tested in war zones and other countries. So I really, really like it. So let's go ahead and start this one. I'm going to move pretty quickly through this. Some of this stuff we've talked about before. So I'm not going to talk a lot, but I want to let you know this is just really about the group. If somebody needs to stop me and ask me a question, do so. Otherwise, I'll just move pretty quickly because I know you are getting hungry. Actually, you shouldn't be. There's lots of snacks here, so I could keep going, but no, I won't. All right, let's talk about, this comes from Grace Alliance. So let's talk about groups. Who can be a leader? You don't have to be a professional. This is what I love about this. You do not have to be a professional counselor to do this one. Really, you just want to be a person who really cares about people and cares about mental health and spiritual needs that people have. Be compassionate and committed to serve. Confident and skilled. Like if you already lead a small group, this is great. If you already do small groups, this is perfect. You want to model recovery to others, meaning that you really do try to do the things that you talk about. You know, I mean, you're going to be a facilitator, so you're not even going to be, but you just want to live it out. You want to have an active personal faith, and you know, just all the things that we would want for somebody who's leading somebody in the group. So here are the 10 keys to being an excellent group leader. And again, I'll send you these too. Plus, what I'll do is I'll send, let me tell you this. If you know that you want to be a leader, then you can email me once I send you all that stuff, and I'll send you the leader's guide. There's like a leader's guide that goes along with it, but I'm not going to send that one out to everybody if you're not going to lead a group. I'll just send that to the ones who want it. Okay, so here's the keys to being a good group leader. You want to get other people to read. You should never read. All right. This is where you want participants being involved. You want to prepare. You want to basically review the materials so to know what you're covering. Live it, give it. You cannot give what you don't have. So you want to really live out what you talk about. Validate and affirm, which we've been talking about, is validating. We're going to look at that a little bit even deeper in this. Group discovery. You're not there to teach. This is about basically facilitating discussions. Asking questions. This is not a place that we will look at doctrinal issues. This is not a theology Bible study. We'll stay on track. Make sure you, manage the time well. Create safety. We're going to talk about how to do that. But this is basically where we really are creating a safe place for people to come and heal together. You want to model joy, which means that, you know, this is also, it's okay to laugh. It's also okay to play. And you want to basically really focus on simple love. It's just a safe environment. All right? Here's what the boundaries are. You need to expect that people will be hurting that come this group, right? This is going to be people who are suffering. It's not personal, meaning it's, you know, people, when their people are hurting, okay, hurting people hurt people, meaning that they're sometimes difficult to love. So just expect that sometimes there's going to be some challenges. You are not responsible. This is not a group that you are responsible for fixing people. I would say that none of our groups are responsible for fixing people, but we're definitely not for this one. Very important to have good self-care. In the break, somebody asked me about my self-care, which I appreciated because that was super kind because, yes, I have PTSD because I sit in trauma all the time. But super important to have people around you that you trust, that you can talk. Hugs. One of the things that was most difficult for me to move back to New Orleans was because the Northwest beauty was part of my self-care, you know, just being able to go to the mountains and the ocean and all of that. It's a little bit harder in New Orleans to find beauty, but we do it. We find it. So you just have to really work hard at making sure that you have good ways that you take care of yourself, exercise, eating right, all those good things. Being close to Jesus. I'm closer to Jesus in now than I have ever been. I have to be. Right? And so when you're with suffering, it actually draws you to the heart of the Lord because you need it. We have to make sure we start and end on time. We have to respect people's, you know, time. If there is a talker, somebody who wants to take over the group, we have to make sure we know how to do that. And I'll come back and talk about that. If you have a quiet group, then you basically, you know, you have to know how to sort of get that going. And that's normal in the beginning. Who can attend? Anybody who is struggling with PTS, anybody who's gone through something traumatic, anybody who has PTSD. Now, if the person has to be stable and able to cooperate, right? You can't, there's some people that just aren't ready for a group setting because they're maybe too reactive or dissociative. They have to, if they have like an anger management issue, they can't be reactive. And you know, the narcissism kind of stuff is hard. So these are some things to look out. You cannot basically have these really serious issues in a group because, again, you're a peer person. You're not trained. It's not a therapeutic group. So you really have to basically have those people. We'll talk about how to handle that. Who can attend? You can have other people come in, like, you know, people who are observers that come in. You can have family or close friends of the people who are struggling So it really is a really open group. One thing I love about Live in Hope groups is that it is an open group, meaning you do not have to come the first one and be there for the whole 10 weeks. You can come in at any point, and then we rotate it. What we've done in Baton Rouge is we've run it. It's still running. It's been over a year, and they just keep, you know, flipping it back over. So that way people can come in at any point. So it's not a closed group, which is really good. Each lesson stands on its own. Okay, we want to be respectful. Okay, the people who come in have to be respectful, and they're not coming in and bringing in other perspectives or teachings. We're staying on track. Group, oh, this is so important. Group is not about benevolent needs, because if you start that with somebody coming in and you start trying to help people, then it really, that is not what the purpose of this group is. So you have to really stick to what the purpose is. It's not a place that we're really trying to, you know, give money for other things. It's not a professional therapy group. And the other thing is that we want to, you know, discourage romantic interest. We used to run a singles ministry before my husband, we went to Portland. We had this great singles ministry. And one year, 10 of our 11 leaders all got married. And we were like, are you kidding us? Like we lost our whole leadership. So it was really, really interesting. So you could see how that could be distracting in the group. So if that happens, you have to really help with that. Okay, group structure, you can meet anywhere. Usually you want 5 to 8, 10 max. It takes an hour and a half. You generally, for hospitality, unless you just want to, I wouldn't do foods or anything, just because that puts burdens on people and whoever's hosting. You could do whatever you want to do. A lot of times what people will do is, like, after the last lesson or whatever, like once every 10 weeks or so, they'll do like a little potluck or something. But you don't have to. It really, this is the one that you just want to make sure that you don't make it a burden. You can communicate through email, phone, whatever you want to do. Have a prayer chain. You can have guest presenters come in. That's fine. But keep it interactive, not just straight teaching. It's very, very important. This is a group where you really want people sharing. Just like you guys had that 10-minute opportunity just to share. It's an opportunity because we heal in relationships, and it's an opportunity to really talk. Last group, sometimes they'll have testimonies. They'll have, you know, some of them will decide to keep going, and some people will basically then become leaders. So anyway, this is just basically what you can do with a group. Some of the groups in Baton Rouge, what happened is that they actually transitioned after they did Living Hope over into another type of cell group. So the group format is you have an overview, just of what we're working on today, a quick welcome, which is, again, lined out in the book, a prayer. And then there's the faith section, which is the scripture and commentary discussion, the facts, which is the education discussion and tools, skills activity. This is when your psych first aid kind of stuff is put in. And then you have your future, which is in your encouragement closure, what's coming up. And then you end with the group prayer, which is like popcorn prayer. We'll talk about that in a second. So the leader basically is going to sort of read and overview, review the full topic, questions, activity. Any of the reading scripture and all that kind of stuff is done in the group by group members, but you'll just sort of prepare beforehand. And then the prayer, the small group success is dependent on prayer, not personality. So it's really not, you know, you want to be praying as a leader, but it's not about having to be this amazing prayer person. It's really about just having opportunity to talk to the Lord together. You can do that easily. Facilitating the group, so welcome. This is giving you more information. This is sort of the vision of the group. For those living with these challenges, understanding God's grace and support. Guidelines, so you want to give the guidelines. Listen, we're not fixing. This is an encouragement group. We want to be confidential. We want to be respectful. You just want to create safety. You want to have a place where we talk both about praise and problems. And we want to pray. We want to validate stories, thank God, ask God for wisdom. So this tells you a little bit more about the actual group. So this is the faith part. The group participant's going to read the scripture, have a different participant read the commentary and question, facilitate discussion. This is your role. There's a facts place where we really just sort of have a discussion guided by questions. You have a group activity. You have an instruction for the worksheet, And then the future is a closing of the meeting with summary points. So again, this is just the way it works. Closing prayer, you can do like a popcorn type of prayer where you take turns aloud, voluntary, it's no pressure. Pray what's on your heart. Prayer doesn't have to be long or eloquent. One word prayer is enough. You really want to make people really just comfortable. This is an excellent community group because it is very seeker sensitive. So it really is a group that you could bring in non-believers. Okay, that's what you did very well in Baton Rouge last year. Leader closes, you affirm the group or peace and blessings over the group. You know, pray for them to be able to sleep and for their relationships. So you just, again, this is a very easy group to lead. Now, the next section, I'm going to give you all the things that can happen that probably won't, but, you know, I'm required to let you know just in case they do. And so some of it you're going to go, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to leave this group. Please do not do that. This is just the when you see the commercials and it's like, oh, take this medicine. And then the next 5 minutes, they go all the reasons why you can't, you know. This is this part, right? So, all right. So lots of intense and inconsolable. Let's look at this one. So basically people they get out of control. They're emotionally very upset. You want to use some of the tools that you're going to learn in the next section. Ask, can I pray for you? Do not gather around and lay hands on everybody. Okay, this would be a point where we wouldn't want to do. We might have somebody who would gently sort of touch the person, but this is not a time we're going to gather and lay hands on. Oh, can I tell y'all a funny story? A funny story. So this is just so fun. This is tells you about the body and how it works. So it really wasn't really funny for the people that happened to. But anyway, so this lady one day was at church and she was like, you know, about to sing. And all of a sudden a man from behind her reached over to get a hymnal in front of her. And most of us don't have hymnals in our church anymore, but some of you might, there used to be like a hymnal in there. And before the guy could know it, the lady had taken him and flipped him over. So note to self, never reach over. This woman was a trauma survivor, right? Obviously. And so a hand reaching over instinctively, she just did it, right? Freaked everybody out. So just be careful about touching and startling and those kinds of things. Just a note of you careful about, we don't think about, let's turn the lights out at church and everybody hold hands with people you don't know, right? Not good for trauma survivors. So anyway, don't get me started. All right. I used to get in so much trouble after Katrina because I would fuss at my worship team because they would do crazy things like sing about how God's love is like a hurricane. And I'm like, I'm watching everybody dissociate. I'm like, what are you? I'm sending text messages. Stop. What are y'all doing? You know? So, you know, anyway, I have quite the reputation. So, all right. Moving back. I'm back in focus. All right. So then we've got to comforting prayer. So no real intensive breakthrough, rebuking enemies, those kinds of things. Really want to just come alongside people and reaffirm them. And then I always say you want a co-leader. I think you need a co-leader in the room because if you have somebody distressed. Closure, validate. Okay. So when, so if somebody's super upset, we want to validate them, ask them how they're doing. We want to affirm their importance to God and the group. We want to help them. Maybe there's some, you learn how to breathe and all this kind of great stuff in the book. So you may want to use some of the things to just help them to try to calm their bodies down and then just comfort and ask for prayer and then maybe follow up the next day. Okay, so conflict person. This is a person who's basically just angry. They're just not ready for a group. Let's say that they've left. This person has basically privately been said, hey, I'm not sure that you're really ready yet for the group. We'd encourage you to maybe go get some counseling, and I'm going to continue to love and pray and check on you. But so you want to come back to the group, and you want to talk to the group about it and just basically say that this person is not stable enough to participate well in the group right now, and just that basically we want to just continue praying for them. Just let the group know. You just handle it respectfully. All right, so again, chances of this happening is very minimal, but just in case. All right, we've talked a lot about this, so I'm not going to go over a lot of this, but I will say a couple of things. We talked about don't reason and correct and or discounting. It's really, this is not about arguing about stuff. Do not give silent treatments or ignore, all right, because that would be incredibly triggering for most people. And if somebody gets loud, if you get louder, that's not going to work. So you just have to calm you down. Do not use but. Oh, this one, everybody, guys, this might be the best thing the whole day. If we would simply just take out the word but in our relationships, all of our marriages and relationships would get better instantly. Because how many of you have been talking to someone you love and then, you know, they say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, yeah, you're right, da, da, but, and then it doesn't matter what they said the first part. You only hear the second part. So if we would just simply start saying to somebody, yes, I'm hearing you that, man, you were just so overwhelmed and this is so painful for you. And you may want to think about maybe trying some breathing techniques right now or, you know, whatever. My brain's tired at this point, so I'm probably not going to give you all very good examples. But just take the but out and use and instead. All right, we've talked. Okay, this is the most important things for Live in Hope groups, and you'll hear this a lot, is, and you already know how to do this. You want to validate people's emotions. You want to affirm the strength behind what they are saying and able to express an encouragement. Like a lot of, man, you are so courageous. Wow, love your faith, your perseverance. You want to just affirm people. If we could just affirm people, oh my goodness, we live in such a negative world. I'm going to like respond so much better if someone says, wow, I really love how you're, you know, how courageous you are, right? And then I'm going to be open to saying what I need to grow or do in other areas. And the last one is reconcile. This is a part where we want to validate and affirm. And then this is the part I love about Living Hope groups. Then what we're doing is that we are then reconciling. We're bringing people back to God's grace. Like we're bringing people. We're here to understand and walk through this together with God's grace for the process. We really want to bring it back to a place of safety. So you'll see that in a second too. All right. For time's sake, I'm not going to go through and like look at each of these, but I'll just mention a few of these. You will get sometimes where people are really hyper-religious. People who have experienced trauma go to extremes. So they're either anti or all in, right? And so sometimes people will absolutely give spiritual meaning to things that aren't spiritual. So this one, for example, I struggled with anxiety. I was having a panic attack at church. And then had the pastors pray against an afflicting spirit and my anxiety stopped. I know this is certainly a spiritual issue. Okay. Well, could be. But the chances of really what happened was that these pastors were praying and certainly God can come in and help. But the thing is, as the pastors came and prayed, probably started to calm this person down because, oh, I'm being loved and ministered to right now. And so anxiety is not always a spiritual issue. Anxiety is a body issue, right? Can be spiritual as well. But I think this is the thing is that what we would want to say is we want to validate first. Is like, wow, I can see why that was so comforting for you that they came and that, you know, here you were, that they prayed for you and your anxiety went away. And how wonderful that you went and you were courageous enough to go and let somebody know that you were struggling with this. That's affirming. And then the reconcile would be, I'm so happy that you're sharing this with us now. And that I think that it's a wonderful thing to basically understand that God loves us and he's trying to help us. And that he's also basically given us resources and people to help us do that. There's 100,000 things you can say. But the point is that you don't go into, well, I'm not really sure this is a spiritual issue. And, you know, I don't really know that you have an afflicted spirit. You just don't do that. You just come into it and you really just meet them where they are, validate, affirm, and reconcile. Hello. Jacqueline, where'd she go? All of a sudden, it decided it's not going to work. Oh, wait. Maybe if I do this. Okay, now it is. I got it. There you are. It got stuck for a second. So this would be, This would be people being very negative. So the same kind of thing. And again, we could go through and really let you guys practice with this, but I'm going to send it all to you with examples of what you would say and not say and all that. So you could just look at that. Okay. Now, this is the one where you're going to freak out, but let me just tell you not to. Oh, that's not validating, is it? Okay, I'm going to understand that you will freak out by this, but it's going to be okay. That's still not validating. All right, we're going to talk about basically sometimes that people are going to get very anxious. If they're very anxious and they start to panic and get distressed, the first thing you want to focus on is just really try not to focus on it. Just continue with the group and see if the person can calm down. Let them come and go if they need to go out and walk around and come back. That's okay. Just say we understand. You just make it very, very safe. And if your co-leader can go out and check on that person if they get triggered in the group, right? Flashbacks. Oh, this is the part where I'm going to freak you out. Oh, goodness. Okay. Anybody ever seen anybody have a flashback before? Okay, good. All right, a little bit. So flashback, let me tell you what a flashback is. A flashback is literally a body memory. It's a memory of a traumatic event. And unfortunately, what happens in that moment, the person's body feels like it is happening currently. It's happening right now. It's happening present. This is how much the body actually stores. I've actually been processing. One time I was processing a physical attack with a client. And as she was sharing her story, she had a flashback and the actual fingerprints and the bruises came up on her skin. So our bodies store our trauma. And so people can relive that. And it feels like in the moment that it's happening in the moment. So very, very important that if somebody has a flashback in a session, what you want to do is just to very gently say, you're safe. You're safe in here. You're in the room with us right now. Your body feels like it's happening, but it's not. You're safe. You're okay. It's scary when it happens the first time because if you've never seen it before. But bottom line, guys, it really is okay to just really be safe, and it stops. Okay. It stops. It's just something that this is the PTSD part. You've probably seen it on movies where soldiers have those flashbacks, and all of a sudden they're back in the war, right? So it's the same kind of concept. So people can have that for different things. So you just want to calm the group down. Just basically say, hey guys, everything's okay. She's just having a flashback. Don't touch them. Gently, it just depends on what kind of flashback, but I would just basically say it's just a flashback. You're safe. Feel your, look around the room, orient them, calm them down. You can remind them about their breathing stuff that they learned in the Living Hope group. And then basically they could go for a walk with the group leader. The chances of this happening is about 1%. Okay, honestly, but again, just I need to prepare you so you don't get mad at me if it happens. And then you just say, okay, that crazy lady from Louisiana didn't tell us what to do. Yeah.
That's where we can refer to EMDR.
Oh, yeah. If you've got somebody who's got PTSD that they're having flashbacks, they need to be seeing a counselor too. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. This is even more rare, so I don't even want to focus on it. You're like, oh my gosh, Michelle, people are going to be fainting in this group. Yeah, listen, I do this full time, 40 hours a week. I'll have probably 30 hours of clients a week. I've never had anybody faint. I had one young woman when I was doing women's ministry in Oregon who was having panic attacks, but the chances of this is very rare. They just want to scare you. Okay, suicide. Then you might have somebody who talks about suicide. The thing that's important about this, guys, is just because somebody says they want to die does not mean that they want to die. What most of the time that means is I'm in so much distress, I want the pain to stop. Okay, so what's very important is that if we want to be listening for suicidal thoughts, we want to be listening for that. What are some of the things people may say? They may tell you, hey, I want to die, or I'm thinking about hurting myself. They may, start giving their stuff away. I mean, there's a bunch of things. When you guys get the handouts, there's all kinds of great resources on that. But the most important thing that I want you guys to do is simply ask a person if they're thinking about it. And the myth is that if I ask them, then they might actually go do it. Nope. We just want to simply say, are you thinking about hurting yourself? That's it. Ask. If they say, yes, then we want to say, well, how? When? You want to get details. And the more specific that they go, yeah, well, I'm going to do it this and I'm going to do it tomorrow, that person is in great crisis and we want to get professionals involved. 911, 911, or we want to basically get that person to a doctor or a family member to come and get that person, okay? Again, the chances of this happening, very small, but I just want you to know, just in case. If the person is basically just saying, I just don't want to hurt anymore, then this would be a great referral kind of situation. This would be basically, you know, let me just love on you and care about you kind of thing. And I get it. I get it. You're in so much pain that it makes sense that you just don't want to hurt anymore. But suicide is a permanent decision to a temporary feeling, right? And so you just want to basically sort of be there. But you go to ask specifics. And if you don't know, call the hotline, call your pastor, call a mental health professional. Don't take any risk. Don't take any risk. But for the most part, most people are just like saying, man, I'm in a lot of distress. In the 12 years that I've been back after Katrina, we've called 911 probably 10 times, maybe. And I have, most of the time, I have about 40 counselors that work in the center, and we do horrific trauma. And so it's pretty rare. And most of those were, now that's not counting right after Katrina, there was a lot of craziness. But since Katrina, since the year, we'll say the last 11 years, we rarely call. So this is not something that you're going to normally see. But just in case, wanted to let you know. All right. Okay. So what I will do, guys, is... basically, you will receive a certificate. I'm going to let you guys ask some questions. You will receive a certificate. All you need to do is write your name on it. And at the bottom is a phone number for Grace Alliance. Would love, 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 love for you guys to do this group. Okay, so you guys talk to your pastors and everything, and at least try to do a group in each of your churches and try it out. But this will qualify you to be a leader. And so when you leave, make sure you get one of these certificates. And if you do want to lead a group, I just need you to email me and I'll send you, I'm going to send everybody this one, but I will send you the leader's guide if you are going to lead a group. Okay, so questions, any questions about Living Hope groups? You know, that's a great question. I wouldn't see why not. I don't know if they've ever used it, probably for older teens. I look at the materials. I think it would be fine. Yeah, I think it would be fine. That's a good question. I mean, a lot of the things that you're talking about are things that they need to know, you know, absolutely. So I'd look at it just to see about the language and the appropriateness of it. Okay, any other questions? You guys have been an amazing group. I'm in awe of you guys being here on a Saturday morning. I want to pray for you, and then we'll, of course, be around if you guys have any further questions. I'll be sending you stuff, so if you have further questions, please let me know. And whatever the Lord will allow, you know, us in the future to do to support you guys as you heal, know that we will be praying. And also available if you have any questions. And there's a lot of resources and a lot of things that we would love to be able to help with if the Lord provides the funding. You can also pray for Project Sustain with AACC. We're in the process right now of raising funds so that we can go around and help communities, just like we've helped you, and then help with really coming in with very specialized training to help your communities heal. So definitely pray for that. And pray for Jacqueline's organization, who literally y'all are responding all over the place. Puerto Rico, y'all are in Puerto Rico, Texas, you're still in New Orleans. You guys are all over. And so just pray for those two groups. So let me pray for you, and then we'll finish up. Father, we just want to come to you today, and we thank you, first of all, that you are a God who loves us beyond what we can ever imagine or hope for. And Lord, I know that, you know, what's so amazing about you is that you are present with us, all of us, every moment, and that's including these traumatic moments, Lord. And your heart breaks for us. And even in those moments, Lord, you are working to heal our hearts, to draw us to you, and to redeem our stories, Lord. And so, Father, I thank you for every person who's come today and just sacrificed their time and their willingness to basically learn about how to help people who are suffering and how to come alongside and how to bring your heart into broken places. And Father, I just pray that you will help this community. I pray that you will use what has happened in this room today, that people can go out and actually be just a great, great, great stewards for you in the community. I pray that many will come to Christ, that lives and families will be changed, and out of the ashes that great beauty will happen. Pray, Father, just that for the brokenness of this community and the people that really need you. Pray, Father, that in their despair that they will turn to you, and that there will be eternal significance, eternal value in the pain that's happened, Lord, because people will come to know you. Pray for those that are out and the people in this room that will be ministering and serving, that you will help them, Lord, just to be restored and to take good care of themselves. And just pray that you fill up anything that's given away and just love on. Father, I pray blessings on this community. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.
Let me just say a word. Yeah, hold that, actually, just 1 second. So yesterday I had made two phone calls. So SOMA, for those of you from Refuge and don't know, we're part of the Evangelical Free Church of America, EFCA or EV Free. Sometimes it's abbreviated. And so Jacqueline on the far side there, she's with EFCA. Her email was up there. Reach Global. That's an arm of our denomination, our association, that goes in and helps. And so I called our district superintendent, Neil, and said, Neil, I'm a little panicked. I said, no one said anything about cost. And I think it's all being covered. Like they're flying here and they have to stay somewhere. But, you know, anytime I've brought in people, we've offered, you know, to pay and we've kind of known. And he said, I think it's all covered. You know, and it's part of what it means to be part of our association, that we're better together. And as a church, you contribute to your district and to the denomination, and that covers these things. But call Mark Lewis, just in case. And Mark Lewis is specifically with Reach Global Disaster. So he was the initial contact I had as our pastor, who checked in on me right away. How is your church? And so again, this is our denominational leadership checking in. And so I called him, and he said, yes, they're coming via their passion for helping, and they are missionaries. They are supported, and that is, again, why you as a church and why churches are encouraged to support your district and your denomination. So all of that to say, thank you so much for coming and giving of your time, and you have so many other things going on, but to want to love on us and care for us, and we are better together. And that's not just EV Free, but as two churches here in Santa Rosa and others that are like-minded for the gospel. And I know Char and I, in those first couple of weeks after the fire, we both just said what we're hearing from our bodies is that we want to be equipped for this long journey of caring and helping. And so then when this opportunity came, it just definitely seemed the thing to do. So what I would ask of you is when we're done, let's give them a big round of applause for coming. Come up and talk to them, thank them. If you want to support what Reach Global does, that you can go to efca.org and find links and all that stuff. And we will, on our website, and I mentioned this to Michelle, all the materials, I know she's going to make those available. We're going to try to have one page on our website next week that'll have the audio training online there, and we'll figure it out what we can do to break it down. or at least timestamp things so you know where parts are. We'll have the PowerPoints and just all the resources kind of in one place, and then we can direct you guys to go there and kind of pull from that. And then we'll also put in some information on how to, you know, reach out and bless them. But so do those things. Check out the resources once we let you know about them. And this is just wonderful. And it's great to be better together and to not feel like one church has to know and do everything, but we can come together. So with that, thank you. Let's give them a big round of applause. Very cool. Very cool. We're humbled and blessed. This has been, it's been a lot, but it's been more than I anticipated. And I think, and I'm praying that for God's glory, we are going to be used as this material works its way in us. I'll close with this. In fact, if you'll stand, it'd probably be good for the blood. It hasn't warmed up. I feel like it's gotten colder since 8. So with this will be our benediction. And this is a verse I shared with our church early on. And it was a verse shared at one of the first pastors' gatherings we had that week after the fire. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. And then verse 5, which Michelle mentioned, for as we share abundantly in Christ's sufferings, so through Christ we share abundantly in comfort too. So you are dismissed. Thank you for coming today.